We begin today a new perek, and the day's daf is Nun Gimel as we get closer to Gan Eden, having gone from Yom Kippur and moving into the Gan, which is, of course, the Sukkah, is connected to the Gan. And we begin with Ketzad Me'abrim et Ha'arim. So we've dealt with the dinim of the Tchum, but we haven't explained how the Tchum is measured from the edge of the city. What defines the city? That is not clear. I mean, if a city would be nicely defined by a wall all around, then it might possibly be well defined on its own. But I mean, what do you do in a city like Yerushalayim, you know, where you've got parts that stick out for miles and miles, like you go down to Das Hospital on one side or through the various Ramots on the other side. And then in the middle, there's like nothing except the road. So how exactly do you work that out? That is called Ibur Ha'ir. Now, we'll see that the lashon that we have over here about Ibur is based on pregnancy. Ibur, just like a pregnant woman's stomach sticks out far more than the rest of her body. How do you make a city me'ubar so that it's consistent, that it sticks out all around and not in some strange ways that the tchum has to be measured from a different point wherever you go? So if you have a bayit nichnas, a bayit yotze, a pigum is nichnas, or a pigum is yotze. So if you have, let's say, a city that is not surrounded by a wall, and it's got houses, and some of these houses stick out further, some of these houses go in, or suppose you have a city that is surrounded by a wall, but walls very often have fortifications and places where, as you know, there's parts that stick out and allow you to shoot around, and there's parts that go in and allow you to trap people underneath your tower. How do you measure the wall? Let's say Hayusham Gedudiot Gvot Asarat Fachim. Let's say you've got areas that are actually currently unoccupied, but they were once upon a time fully occupied homes, and now they're churvot. Or there may be, let's say, bridges, or there may be tombs, nefashot, in which we have Sheyesh Behem Beit Dira. And obviously places that are built that do not originally, not built for purposes of living, are not an extension of the city, but these kind of places will usually have, like a bridge, will usually have a shomer that collects the tolls. So basically the toll booth is considered to be a dira. So in other words, anything that people will use as part of the services for the city, all of those things are motzi'in et hamidah k'negdan. We extend the tchum evenly across that entire part of the city. And that is defined by the direction. So in other words, if something juts out, let's say, on the northwest side, so then we will pull out the southwest side also, so that the entire west side is now on the same straight line. And then we make the tchum after we have the city. Then we pull out the tchum, assuming, let's say, I mean, this is just an example to talk about square. So assuming that the city really was itself square, but what merubat actually means in the end is a rectangle. In other words, it doesn't have to be square. The point is that the sides are straight on all four sides. So asino takimin tabla merubat kedei she niskar et hazaviyot. This way, you gain the extra space of the diagonal of the square. So as opposed to a circle, where no matter where you go, this moment that you leave the center of the circle, you no longer have the full radius till the tchum, so to speak, the end of the circle. Where you're dealing with a square, obviously you might not be right smack bang in the middle of the square and still have lots of room to move because of the diagonal. That's what we give you here. The question is, however, how to read the Mishnah. So we have a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. One of them says the correct word in the Mishnah is me'abrim with an ayin, and one of them says the correct word is me'abrim with an olive. And the understanding of me'abrim is clear. It means to pull out, meaning to make pregnant the city so that it now extends outward. The other one, me'abrim with an olive, would mean adding additional parts. So in other words, let's say the city has, so to speak, a leg sticking out to the northwest. So then we will add a lake, so to speak, to the southwest. So that's a lotion of Avrim of Aver. So, I mean, the issue is, of course, we're about to spend an entire daf analyzing different ways of saying things for some reason. And I just want to put in the chat over here a fascinating Rambam that I think is Nogea, if I can get it to go into the chat. Hold on. No. It gave me the web page instead. I don't know why. I always have a problem in getting things into the... let me try that
again. I don't understand. I always have a problem in getting things into them. But I could search the web for it.
Well...
maybe one of us can post it, Ruby.
Hold on 1 second. Let me try again. I don't know why it doesn't like my postings. Ah, got it. Okay. There we go. Now let's get it in. Okay. All right. Now, what I want to point out is that the issue of Eruvin is very strange because the word Eruvin, Irvuv, is almost always used in a derogatory sense. It means when things are messed up, unclear. The Rambam uses that in order to explain why we needed to be metaken the tefilas, because people did not know how to speak. What they did was they spoke yeshivish. And in speaking yeshivish, when they came back from Bavel and so on, in speaking yeshivish, they would say, so we have a bisula of that, onasach, yokar, in this, and so on and so forth. And nobody, what the heck are you talking about? You can't even speak one language. And because of that, the Gemara says, if you speak yeshivish, you cannot learn, because your mind cannot function properly, because it's me'urvav. And in order to be able to think, you must have clear language. So the question is, Erevin itself, which is mixed and confused, is often used, and you can see how often the Rambam uses the word Eruv and Bilbul in this halacha, where he's describing why we needed the tikkun of the tefillas. And remember that Eruv and Bilbul has everything to do with language from the beginning, which is Bavel. So that in fact, the question of multiplicity of language, different ways of looking at things, is very much part of the whole issue of Torah Shebaal Peh that has been so central to Masechet Erevin, correct? Because remember, Erevin, we're talking about the first Shmirah of Avram Avinu, the first Gezeras that were made by Shlomo HaMelech, and all of the Megillah that turns out to be the Megillah that is the flying Megillah, which is an indication of what type of learning and how much information there is in Torah that is hidden between the lines in Torah Shebaal Peh and compared to the total information of the universe, and so on and so forth. All of the dinim, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, all of the klolim, who do we paskin like? The issues of whether the bat kol is considered to be a psak or not, the difference between a rov and a yochid, and a chorif or eno chorif, and so on and so forth. A Rebbe Meir who says things that we can't be oimed alsov daitum, because of that we won't paskin like him. The interrelationship of mind, language, and presentation is very central to this Masechet for some reason. So the continuation over here of the idea of a multiple meaning to the word Irvuv, which is fascinating. Because what it turns out from this Gemara is that on the one hand, people who cannot speak properly will mix their language and they will create, as we know from all over the world, there's many, many of these semi-languages that are mixed one with the other. Yeshivish is one of them. And so they're creoles. And these types of languages do not allow proper thinking, according to the Gemara. And we're going to show that remarkably, if you don't know how to speak, you don't know how to learn. But if you do know how to speak, by the same token, you can actually present one language in a completely different language in what appears to be almost a pun, but is actually a riddle that enables you to understand something that no one else will understand unless he's smart enough to decipher your words. So this is the strange kind of things that are going to be going on today. And we will see the different issues, starting from the very simple question. Mandatani me'abrim with an olive is using the word me'abrim as an aver. an additional leg, let's say. Mandatani me'abrim, with an ayin, understands it to be ki'isha u'bara, a larger pregnant woman. And there's other machlokas that we have between Rav and Shmuel that revolve around understanding the meaning of a word. Let's say, how do we understand the meaning of the ma'arat ha-machpelah? Doubled. What is it doubled? So Rav and Shmuel, one says, shnei batim zelifni mizeh. It means there's an inside room and an outside room. Whereas one says, no, there's a lower level and there's an upper level. Ask the Gemara, look, I mean, if you're talking about a cave, then it makes sense to call it a double cave if there's a lower cave and an upper cave. I mean, that's a double cave. Each one is a cave and there's one room in the other. How is it double? That's not a double cave. That's a multi-roomed cave. I mean, it's a crazy way to call it. My Machpelah. And according to that Mandiyamar, it turns out that the doubling has nothing to do with the cave. Instead, the way to understand the Ma'arat HaMachpelah is the cave of the double. And what does that mean? That what's unique about this cave is that it had a lot of different zugot. And zugot are doubles. So it was kifula in kifalot, meaning it had many zugot in it. And that's the what basically what we learned in the Pasuk, Mamre Kiryata Arba, what that means, what does a Kiryata Arba means? Omrib Yitzchak is called the Arba, as Rashi brings us in the Torah, Kiryata Arba Zugot, because we had Adam and Chava, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah, and that's the Kfulot. And remember how important this was, because the alternative in the original meaning of Chevron was that it was the Kiryat Arba that was originally made by the Arba Nephilim, who did not have Zugot. And they would take as their partners whoever the heck they felt like at any particular time from whatever sex and whatever species, as Rashi says. So the stress on the development of Chevron, Lashon Chibur, of course, between the original Nephilim and the Zugot is fundamental to understanding the transition from Eretz Canaan to Eretz Yisrael. Now that brings us to another machlokas of Ayibi Mei Amrafel.
Abraham is the one who teaches us about being Koneg Isha through Kenyan of Karka here.
Yes. Thank you. There's a long essay on that. You're welcome to refer everybody to it, but that doesn't need to be interrupted with it. Thank you. Vayibi Mei Amrafel. How do we understand Amrafel? Rav Shmuel. So one says, actually, the real name of the person that we're calling Amrafel is Nimrod. Why did we call him Amrafel? Because he was Amar Vihipil. So here already we're starting to break words into different parts. And we're saying this person gave the tzivui to throw Avram. So Amar, he gave the command, throw Avram into the Kivshan Ha'esh. So that's Amar Pal. The other one says, on the contrary, his name was Amrafel. And he was called Nimrod because of Mirida. Shimridit kol olam kol olav v'malchuto, because he went and led the first rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we're saying Alav, meaning against himself, because we don't want to say that, during the time of his Malchus. And as we've pointed out many times, this itself is a play on words, because Nimrod and Amrafel is exactly Irvuv, because Nimrod is Aramaic Hebrew, and Amrafel is Hebrew Aramaic, but they mean exactly the same thing. Nam Raid means he said, go down into the Kivshan Ha'esh. Omar Pal means he said, go down into the Kivshan Ha'esh, except that we reverse the order of the languages. So it's actually a play on the entire idea that we're discussing over here, as we'll see. Another machlok is Rav and Shmuel. What does Chadash mean? Vayokam Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim. So Rav and Shmuel argue. One says Chadash means new. It's the adjective of the Melech. V'chadamar, no, chadash can mean, when it's applied to a malchus, that the activity of the malchus is chadash. And nitchatshu gezerotav. So man di omra chadash mamash, that he was a different person. I mean, it says the word chadash on the king. Man di omra shenitchatshu gezerotav is because, well, I mean, whenever we have a new melech, we have a end of the old melech, don't we? I mean, so it doesn't say anywhere, vayomot, ex, Vayimloch, why, tachtav? So it must be a reference instead to Nitchatshu Gezerotav. And according to the Man Yomer, Nitchatshu Gezerotav, how does he explain the fact that it says, Asher lo yadat Yosef, which is mashman, that he literally didn't know who Yosef was, which would mean that he's a different guy that appeared at some later point in history. No, that means, it means, who's Yosef? Never heard of him. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you can give your life to these people and like, oh, one day it's never heard of him. So, Davidomi command lo yada lo Yosef klal. Okay, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, you should know that I was zocha to learn by Rav Oshaya, who was Baribi, who was the Gadol Hador, for 18 days. And I threw myself in there. And I can tell you, during the entire 18 days, the only thing I learned from him about our Mishnah is that he said the word Kesed Me'abrim with an olive. What do you mean that's the only thing you learned? Well, what are you talking about? I mean, Rabbi Yochanan himself describes his amazing time in the presence of Rav Oshaya Baribi. And he explained over there, you know, there were 12 Talmidim to Rabbi Oshaya Baribi. I spent 18 days among those Talmidim. And in those 18 days, I was able to see how individual every one of them was, how incredibly profound each one of them, how different they were. Leiv kol echad v'yachad, and how much they knew. Chochmat kol echad v'yachad. I mean, that means he was able to do that in those 18 days, and he didn't learn anything that he could say, I learned, I came out of there with anything. I mean, he was able to basically take in the entire experience on an individual level. Well, I mean, maybe what that means is, says the Gemara, he did learn a lot, but he learned it from them. He wasn't able to access Rav Oshaya Baribi directly. That's one approach. Or you could say, note that Rabbi Yochanan said, I didn't learn anything about the Mishnah. It doesn't mean he didn't learn lots of Gemara. He didn't learn lots of Braita. But if you're asking me what I came out with that would change the way I would read a Mishnah, is that this Mishnah in Erevin, I would say Me'abrim instead of Me'abrim. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, K'shayinu lomdim Torah etzel Rav Oshaya. I could tell you that we wanted so much to learn from him that we crammed in 4 people per amma. Omar Rebbe, Kishayinu Lomdim Torah to Rebbe Elazar ben Shamoa, we would sit 6 people to an amma. Now, this is not really a normal way to sit, as you can imagine. However, there is an equivalent hanhaga, as you remember, how many people can we stuff into a telephone booth or into a VW, right? Now, this is part of your university experience. When it comes to Lahavdil learning Torah, so the question would be, how close can we possibly all get to the Rebbe and still manage to breathe? Okay, but others say this must have been some kind of Derech Nes, but they never heard of putting in 15 people in a phone booth, right? So we know it doesn't have to be Derech Nes. So, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Oshaya Baribi, in his generation, was just as confusing as Rabbi Meir was in his generation. Because that's why I couldn't learn anything from him. I mean, just like Rabbi Meir in his generation, nobody ever knew what he was talking about. You could not figure out what is the bottom line. I mean, because he could tell you anything, right? Like we said before, we had this sugya before about Rabbi Meir. Obviously, this is a consistent theme throughout the Gemara here. So, Af Rabbi Oshaya, Lo yochlu chavei rav lamod al sof dato. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, you may remember the machlokas at the beginning of Erevin about whether we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda's idea about how wide a mavoi could be or the Rabbanans. And you remember what that was dependent on? So let me tell you something. It depends on the generation. The earlier generation, their lave, which was their level of awareness and being able to holistically include things, that they were as incredibly large as the Pesach of the Ulam. Which is, oh my God, it was like an insane size, right? We had like 20 amas, just the Pesach. But the Achronim, they went down to the Pesach Shal Heichal. Sound familiar? So that was only the 10 amas. And that's the, as far as we're concerned, you want to talk about how much brains we got? I can tell you. You know the kind of needle that you use just for darning when you've got a tear in a clothing? And you've got to get the thread through that little eye in the needle. If you don't have good eyesight, you can forget about it. Well, that's about how broad our brains are to try to get some information in there. Forget it. It's like you wouldn't understand a thing. And who are we referring to when we say the Dorot HaRishonim? Well, we mean Rishonim, that would be like Rabbi Akiva. And the Achronim would be like Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa. Or others say we could take this down. We say the Rishonim are themselves a reference to Reb Elazar ben Shamua. The Acharonim is the person that we said was so incredibly great. That was Reb Hoshaya Baribi. And as far as we're concerned, we're like Mole Nekev Machat Sidkits. Says Abaye, well, I mean, you know, it depends what you're talking about. I mean, I can only tell you personally, to try to understand something, for me, it's Kisichta Beguda Ligamora. It's like trying to take this peg, you know, that you're trying to force into an IKEA furniture. And you know how they always do. You just put the peg right in there. It never fits in. And it's like you got to just turn it, and it's until finally you get it in. So that's the way our brains work. I mean, until you get something in that little hole, it's a disaster. And that's as far as Gemara is concerned, trying to understand something. Rava says, I mean, if you're talking about Svara, look, Gemara is to understand what somebody's explaining to you. If you're talking about Svara and trying to figure out what something really means, I have a much better mushel. There ain't no hole at all, okay? Take this big glob of hard wax. Now, stick your finger into the wax. Can you stick your finger into the wax? No, you make a little indent, okay? So when it comes to Svara, that's like how my mind works. And Ravashi says, well, but at least we've got one advantage. I mean, we're like this gigantic reservoir when it comes to forgetting. So anything you put in just sort of drops into a black hole, and then you don't remember anything. So, all right. Now, there's also a difference between the people in Yehuda and the people in the Galil. Omer Yehudah Merab, B'nai Yehuda, who were very careful in how it is that they spoke. And a word was very carefully defined and very carefully articulated. Because of that, nitkaima toratam biyadam, they continued throughout the generations being great talmidei chachamim and so on. People in the Galil that became lax in their speech, and they were not makbid about pronouncing things, announcing things, articulating things, defining things, lo nitkaima toratam biyadam, and because of that, they ended up not really being able to think properly. What do you mean? What does being Mekayim Torah have to do with the amount of how makbid you are? I mean, it's not makbid, is it? Is the idea being makbid? The idea is not to be makbid, it's to be medayik. That's what he meant. So B'nai Yehuda, the dayik Lashona. And not only that, but they kept every shmua so clear that they were able to use simonim, because those simonim were linked to the words that were used. Because of that, they could remember that. Umitnachebu simana nitkaimo toratam b'diadam. The Bnei Galil, the lo dayak lishne, they were unable to use simonim because things weren't really properly interrelated, because it's language that interrelates things. In the end, lo nitkaima torah b'diadam. Yeah, there's another reason also. Bnei Yehuda gamru michad rabba. Learning what the actual texts are and what the sugyas are. So that is always important to have one Rebbe to teach you. Why? Because otherwise the slight differences in the way that it's presented by one Rebbe versus another is going to be confusing, even if conceptually it's the same thing. So because they used to be makbid to learn from one individual, nitkaima toratam biyadam. B'nai Galil that would go driving around, it would go from place to place. I mean, there's so many nice things to see, you know. So we can't actually sit in one place in the Galil. So we have to go around from one yeshiva to another, listening over there and over there. Lonit kaimet Torah tam biyada. Ravina says is another thing. B'nai Yehuda, they used to be makapit to be golo mesechet. And because of that, nitkaima Torah tam biyadam. B'nai Galil were not golo mesechet. And because of that, lo nitkaima Torah tam biyadam. Golo mesechet, Rashi brings, as we will recall for brachas, that there's two issues. Golo mesechet means to uncover their knowledge, meaning sharing it with other people. And the other meaning, the golo, means that they made it clear, meaning that they did not move on till they understood what they were talking about. And therefore, they were able to be mekayim the Torah. David HaMelech, he was very careful to be goli mesechet and to spell everything out until he understood it properly. Shaul, no goli mesechet, he didn't feel that he needed to work. He wanted to be basically learn a lot, like we find by Rabbi Yossi and so on. There's a Sinai. So David, who was goli mesechet, it says about him that yireecha yiruni v'yismachu. So those who have yirat shamayim see my piskei halachas, and they have such pleasure from reading. But it's like when you read a book of tshuvas that is clear, And it's so is the reasoning is so beautiful, and the way it's expressed is so beautiful, and the riots is, you're just like, wow, this is a pleasure to read. And sometimes you read stuff that just sounds so dense and well, what? And it's like very much not. And that's why he used, like the Gemara says in Brachas, that he was very makpid. He used to ask, mipi boshet, Rabbi, yofedanti, yoftechayafti, and so on and so forth, because he needed to know that everything was precise and accurate. Masha Enkein, Shaul, the logali masechet, it says, ubechol asher yifne, wherever Shaul turned, yarshia. He could only do things bad. I mean, it doesn't mean that, but Pashas in the Pasuk. Yashia means wherever he went, he was moving around, cutting off the heads of his enemies and making sure that they wouldn't bother people. But the point is, it also means his Piskei Halachos were not reliable, and he made mistakes, like by Novir HaKohanim, and he jumped to conclusions, and all of that was because of the fact that he wasn't Golei Masechet. Well, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, you should know that nonetheless, Minayin Shemachalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eloto Avon, even though he made the most horrifying mistake in history, he went and he killed Nov Ira Kohanim, the most choshev of people in Klal Yisrael. Nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave him. Where do we see that? Shenemar, because Shmuel, when Shmuel was called up to explain to Shaul what's going on, so Shmuel says to him, Machar Atahu Vanecha Imi. Tomorrow you and your children will be with me. He doesn't mean you'll be dead. He means with me. Imi b'mechitzati. You will have my mechitza in Gan Eden, is what he's saying. And that means that, obviously, if Shaul killed Novir Akonim, is going to be zeicher to be with Shmuel in the daf today, his Nun Gimel, in the Gan. So because of that, it must be that he was nimchal on this entire thing. So now, Omer Rabbi Abba, so if somebody is around over here who could ask the Bnei Yehuda today about the Lashon of the Mishnah, could you please ask, is it me'abrim with the olive or is it me'abrim with the iron? And we have the same problem we talked about in Bechorot. How do you say a rear end? Is it an akuz or an akuz? The issue over there was, remember, we were talking about mumim. And the mumim of the Bechor includes having only one testicle. So over there, Rabbi Akiva says, what you do is you have to set the animal down on its rear end. And he uses the word either akuzo or akuzo, and we don't know which one it is. And then you try to put pressure because it may very well be an undescended testicle, and then it's not a mum. So then you can force the testicle down. But I don't know how to pronounce that word. And they'll know. And so somebody actually did ask them, Sha'ilinu. And they said, they're both correct. So, you know, you don't get much of an answer. Ikedatani ma'abrim. There are some who say ma'abrim, which would mean aver aver. Ikedatani ma'abrim. Ikedatani akuzo. Ikedatani akuzo. And both are basically correct words. Can you give me examples? Like, I mean, you're talking about people in their speech. I mean, we're not talking about how they learned, right? You're applying their speech to their learning. Like, could you give me an example of what it means to say that Bnei Yehuda were very careful about how they express things, that it should be absolutely accurate? Yeah, okay, I'll give you an example. There was this guy who was Ben Yehuda. And he said, he announced, Talit Yeshli Limkor. So they asked him, Mai Gavan Talitcha, what color is your Talit? So he said to them, it is the color of the beets that extend above the ground so that there won't be any unclarity. I mean, obviously he could have said, a normal person would have said it's green. But the problem is that saying Yarok in Hebrew means anything between a yellow and a deep green, which would not be giving information. So he says, okay, you know what beets look like with the leaves of the beet that are sticking up above the ground? Ale Adama, on the ground, that's the color of my talit. Interested or not? All right, if your screen isn't good enough for the resolution of that color, then don't come back to me with problems. All right. B'nai Galil, okay, where do we see that the B'nai Galil, can you give me an example of what it means not to be Dayak Balishna, you know? Well, I mean, there was this guy from the Galil who's walking along around people who are normal, all right? The guy can't even be Toreach himself to pronounce a word properly. So what he says was, Lamanamar, Lamanamar, So who's got an Amar? Now, there's no such thing as an Amar, you know. So they said to him, you idiot from the Galilee, what are you asking for? Are you asking for a chamar, maybe? Meaning you want a donkey to ride on? Or do you want maybe a chamar? You want maybe wine? You want a drink? Do you mean Amar with an ayin? You mean you want wool because you need to make a sweater? Are you talking about Imer? You're talking about a sheep you want maybe to have something to eat? Liyit kisa'a? I mean, would you please learn how to talk? And there was this woman from the Galil who intended to say to a friend, Tai, du'uchli chelba, come and I've got some good butter for you I've made. But since she doesn't know how to talk and she just slurs her words together, what she ended up saying, she wanted to say shluvati, which is isha lachota mishulevet, right? So in other words, my dear friend, come on, I'd like you to come. Instead, because she doesn't know how to talk, she says, shluchti tuchlichluvya, may you be eaten by a lion. So this is like the tod uchlichelba, the chelba, the chet disappeared, the uchlich became uchlach, you should be eaten up by the lion. So it's not exactly always not all that important about how you pronounce things. So I don't think they got along after that very well. Then there was a woman who came to file a police report, you know, so they brought her to the judge, and she's trying to say that they stole my iPad from me. So she walks into the in front of the judge, and she says to him, Mari Kiri. Now, she was trying to say Kiri with a kuf, but she couldn't pronounce the kuf, so she could only make it into a kuf. And a Kiri with a kuf means a master, and it's like honored judge, whereas Kiri with a kuf means a slave. So she says, my esteemed slave. And then instead of saying tabla, I had an iPad, which is a tablet avili. Instead, she says tafla avili, I had a big roof beam. And she says veganvuchmin, instead of saying veganvumina, they stole it from me. She said they stole you from me, and here we were having such a good time. And kadu avit, instead of saying kaden avit, let me tell you how big it was. She says kadu avit, now it is, which doesn't make any sense. That if the katshadru lach iluye, if they would hang you off of my roof beam, your little feet wouldn't get to the ground. Lo matikare ha'ara. Now, this was not a very good way to file the police report in front of the judge. And you can imagine, she did not do very well with this one. So she wanted to say ganvu aminohi, and she said, they stole you from me. She wanted to say kedenav, this is how big it was. So she said, this is now how it was. And then, like an idiot, she tries to describe how big it is. You know, if they hang you over it, it's even bigger than you. That's how big it was. Oh, man. Now, this is fascinating, as I said before, because sometimes we use double meanings and interrelated languages to be able to create riddles which are only understandable by somebody who is smart enough to decipher the puns that are going on. This is Barnea, of course, is a great expert in all of this, just that it takes us 10 minutes to figure out what he's saying, and by then the sugya's moved on. And so that puts together this sugya together with the sugya of Rabbi Meir, de lo avi amin al seif daitai. So we have the one example in Rabbi Barnea over here. And this is cases where people would speak in riddles. So speaking in riddles would be called derech chokhma. So amahata devei Rebbe. So here we had the famous Amma, the maid in Rebbe's house, who used to come to her to explain what things mean, and what does this word mean, and what does that word mean. She's a tremendous expert in language. I want to point out to you that expertise in language is based on the word in the Pasuk. Daniel, you're not muted. Did you want to say something? Of Mordechai Bilshan. Bilshan today means a researcher in linguistics. But the original meaning of Bilshan, says the Gemara, is Bolel Lishonot V'Dorshan. That he was able to get to the bottom of meanings of things by noting the way that different languages would have the same phonemes, and they would mean sometimes similar things, and people would get confused and put in something from one language, mix it with another language. And that's exactly what Amahata Devei Rebbe does when she does not want to be openly saying something. Now, there's many reasons for not openly wanting to say something. One is tzniut. I mean, after all, she was the maid, and it wasn't exactly her business to be going around telling people openly, you know, what they should be doing or not. So so one of the issues would be diplomacy. I mean, called diplomacy is essentially just new. You want to say what you want to say, but you want to say it in a way that nobody can say what you said. I said, what are you talking about? But we know perfectly well what you did say. So this would be one of the Lashonas of Lashon Chochma. Now, when it came time and the guys in the yeshiva were hanging around Rebbe's house for the meal, okay, and they're hanging around a bit too long, and they really have gotten a bit too high. So there's been enough wine that's been gone, that's been given out over here on the table. So she wants to get rid of the guys from the yeshiva. So she would say, Alat nakpat pakad. Note that the ladle is banging against the bottom of the barrel. Now, nakpat, you understand? There are all these different meanings, right? So the thing that takes things out of the cod is banging against the bottom of the, which means there ain't no more wine in the barrel and you're not getting any. And therefore, she said, Yid'un nishraya lekinhon. The little eagles should fly back to their nests. Meaning, when you go back to the dorma, get out of here. Okay. So that's how she put it. But if the fact is people were meant to still hang around and they had finished the barrel, so she wanted to tell them, no, don't leave yet. There's Rebbe who wants people still here. So if she wanted to be boy the late vun, she wants them to stay there at the table. So then she would say, Yaade, some of the guests, Girsa Keter, Chaver Tamina, take the crown of her friend, meaning open up another barrel. We're going to open up another barrel. And then, you know, that ladle, it's going to be floating like a ship at sea, meaning it's going to be so much wine, guys, it's worth staying. Rabbi Yossi Bar Asyan, Ka'avi Mishtai Beloshen Chochma, he would say, this is absolutely hilarious, okay? He wanted to have beets that were dipped in mustard. Now, he certainly does not want to say in public to his servant exactly what it is that I'm going to eat. I mean, he's in the middle of shear, and it's nobody's business what he eats. So how does he say, make beets in mustard? So he says to the guy who's working for him, he says to him, make me a shor b'mishpat, an ox in the court, b'tur miskein, on this poor mountain, which of course translates into another language as shor is tar in Aramaic, and mishpat is din. So tradin is beets, tradin, tar, din. And he wants it on a poor mountain because that's har dal, right? A poor mountain. So you go, oh my God. And the guy actually understood what he was saying, which is even more amazing. And when Rabbi Yossi Bar Asyan was at the front desk, this is the way Rav Chanana learns, and he wanted to ask somebody, like, is this a good hotel? Is it worth staying here? But it's not very nice. You don't say that in front of the front desk, right? So he would ask, he would say this crazy thing. Gevar pum dein chai? Is a man with this mouth alive? What? What in the world is that supposed to mean? Well, it's very simple. Ush pi za na means an ish with a peh, this, and it's raw. So that's what he's saying. The man with this mouth raw. Okay, nobody on the slice say what that is. Ish puzichna, so this ush is this hotel. Mazo tovayesh. You tell me how things are around here. should I check in or not check in? Okay, another example. Rabbi Abu Kedavi Mishtai Beloshen Chochma. So he would say like this, you know what? Turn the coals into an esrog, which means, make them glow beautifully, like, you know, really bright, because arkiul zahavim, then spread out the gold, and then I want you to tell me two of the indicators in the dark. What? Yeah, what was he saying? He was saying, I want to have two roosters prepared on the barbecue. But he's not going to say barbecue me two roosters. So instead he says, turn coals into esrogim and give me the announcers of the time in the dark. So we understand what he's referring to. As I'm saying, make me to Magide Ba'alata on those coals. Now the next piece has two versions. One is the art scroll version, which tries to make it religious. The other is the, shall we say, risque version. Okay. So it turns out that one day the Talmidim could not find Rabbi Eloy. And so they go to Rabbi Abohu, and they say in very fancy language, Hatzpinenu heichan Rabbi Eloy tzafun. Could you show us, please, where Rabbi Eloy is hiding? Because he obviously does not want to come to Shir today. So Rabbi Abohu said to them, well, let me tell you something. You may recall that Rabbi Eloy lost his wife a few months ago and recently got married. So let me tell you something. He is having an awful lot of fun with this Na'ara, who is an Aharonit. So she's this Kohenet. Aharonit, it's his latest wife. Iranit, and boy, is she a live wire. Vinhirato, she kept him up the whole night. And I guarantee you, he is fast asleep for the day. Do not expect him back for sure. That is not the art scroll version. Amazing, these people, no? So it's a machlokas. So the art scroll version is, it wasn't referring to a woman, of course. It was referring to the Torah, which is Eshes Chayil. And it means he had just finished one Masechet, and now he had to start another Masechet. And the next Masechet was from Kochim, so it was an Aharonit. And boy, was it a live wire Masechet, because it got him so involved in the sugi, he was up the whole night and he couldn't fall asleep. Okay. This is sort of like the art scroll on Shir HaShirim, you know. But anyway, so the Gemara brings both Pirushim. So some say, come on, man, we know what he was talking about. He's talking about a woman. Amri Isha. And others say, no, it was a reference to a Masechet. Rabbi Abohu wouldn't have spoken about him like that. But in any event, it's absolutely adorable. So Amrulei LeRabbi Eloy. There was another Masechet who said, Hatzpinenu, Eichan Rabbi Abohu Tzafun. What about Rabbi Abohu? Where is he hiding? Ah, said Rabbi Abohu. Nitya Eitz B'machtir. So he asked for ideas from the one who gives out the crowns. V'higniv L'Mifi Boshet. And then, Hingiv, he went south, to Mephibosheth, which means he got himself smicha from the Nasi, that's the Machtir, and then he went to learn with Mephibosheth Rebbe, Yofedanti. So he went down to the Ziknei Adoraim, who were known to be very, very, you're not going to see him for a while. I'm Rebbe Yeshua ben Hananya. Let me tell you something. Nobody ever beat me in a debate of some kind, right? In other words, we're fighting each other and what something means, except for one woman, one little boy, and one little girl. They squashed me. I was dead. I'll tell you the story was like this. First, the woman, okay? Here's what happened. One time, I'm at this inn, and Astali Polin. So the waitress, she makes me these beans. And, oh, my God, they were delicious. So the first day, I didn't leave one bean on the plate. The second day, I eat. Don't leave one bean on the plate. The third day, it was so salty. I thought she was a brilliant cook. It's so salty that I couldn't touch them at all. The moment I ate one, I pulled my hands out of that plate. So she said to me, Rabbi, why aren't you eating today? So I said, I already ate before. I didn't want to make her feel bad that it was so salty. So she said to me, that's not a very good answer, because if you ate before, you shouldn't have washed on the bread now, right? But you've been eating the bread, so let's get to the facts, all right? Why aren't you eating? So I don't say anything. So she says to him, Rabbi, maybe you have a problem in not having left anything over for the first day and the second day, and that's why you're leaving things over now. Could that not be? Like you ate everything up? And remember that the Chachomim say the leftover food on the plate is meant to be put back in the kitchen to make food for the waiter. Okay? Now, you notice that nothing was left on your plate for 2 days. I wonder why it was oversalted. Okay. So anyway, she got, oh boy, was he, he was, forget it. Anyway, that killed him. Okay, so they say ein mishayrin peya be'ofes. You don't leave a little bit of peya in the serving platter, but you definitely are mishayrin peya for the poor waitress in the plate. And then there was another story where I met this little girl. It's terrible. So anyway, I'm walking along, and I see there's like this beautiful path that's crossing over a field, which saved me a half an hour to be able to cut through. So I'm walking down. I'm walking, and there's a derech avert besad, and I'm walking along it. So this little girl says to me, excuse me, Rabbi, is this not a private field? So I say, what are you talking about, private field? Look at this. There's this beautiful pathway that's been mowed down. Sure, she said. There's lots of robbers like you who cut across paths and mow them down. So that cut me down, let me tell you. Then I had another place. I had this little boy that also killed me. So one time I'm walking along the road, and I get to this intersection. I don't know whether I'm supposed to go right or left. And I see this kid, and he's sitting right there. So I ask him, which is the road that gets to town? So he says to me, well, the one on the right is short, but it's long. And the one on the left is long, but it's short. So I don't know. I didn't think much about what he was saying. And I figured, okay, he said the one on the right is short. All right, fine, so I'll take the short road. So I get there. As soon as I get to the city, I see that I am in the middle of like the area around the city that's all parkland with gates and with trees. And I don't even have the slightest idea. I probably have to go an extra 10 miles to get my way through it. So I go back. And I say to the kid, didn't you tell me this was the short road? He said, yeah, I did. But didn't I tell you it's long? You didn't explain what you want. You said, how do we get to the city? So I explained to you, this is the short road to the city, but it's a long road if you want to get into the city. Now, you just went ahead and you didn't even think. I went over and gave him a kiss, and I said to him, oh, my God. Jewish kids, Ashreichem Yisrael, kulchem chachamim gedolim atem. It's unbelievable what kind of kids you are. Rabbi Yossi Aglili was once walking down the road, and of course he was a Galili, and he had the misfortune of bumping into Bruria. Oh boy. Now Bruria is tough as nails. This is Rabbi Meir's wife. She's a daughter of Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion. This is not simple. So anyway, he doesn't know who she is. So he asks her, excuse me, ma'am, but which road shall we take to Lud? She says to him, you idiot of a Galilim. You don't keep simple halacha. Is there a Mishnah that says, Al tarbe sicha imisha? What are you saying so many words for to ask me how to get to Lud? All you needed to say was, Be'ezel Lud? No, you make like a half an hour conversation. Which road shall we take to Lud? Now, where do you think that's going to get you in life? Okay. All right. They're just amazing. Such a wonderful sugya. Such a wonderful sugya. Okay, we might as well. We have another few minutes, so let's go on, because we got big, big dafim coming up that are a lot of fun, but they take a long time to get through. One time, Bruria saw a particular Talmud, David Kagoris Belachisha, and he was learning, but he was learning quietly. He wasn't singing, so she gives him a nice big kick in the rear end, and she says to him, you don't know a pasuk? Arucha bakol ushmura. If something is arucha bakol, If your limud goes through your whole body and you're completely involved, you're singing, you're swinging, you're caring, then it's going to be shemura. But sitting there whispering, that's the way you learn. You'll forget everything you ever learned. Imlav ena mishtameret. And the Tana says there was once a Talmud that was learning by Rebbe Eliezer, and he would always review. In his mind, you know, like whispering, nobody could hear it, didn't talk it out. After 3 years, he forgot everything he learned. Tana, that Talmud actually is a reference one to the other, the Mefarshim learned. The Talmid Achad Ayala L'Rabbi Eliezer, who was chayev to be burnt up to the Shamayim. Why? Because it says, Kol HaShokheach Davar Achad B'Talmudo B'Schayev B'Nafsho, right? And this guy, he forgot everything he learned for 3 years just because he didn't bother really putting his heart into it. So he should have been killed. But in the Beis Din Shel Mala, they decided, hanichulo, leave him alone. Maybe he didn't learn much, but he was meshamish and adam gadol. He had learned by Rebbe Eliezer, and he was meshamish him. You can't burn up a guy like that. Omar Lein Shmuel Rav Yehuda, Shinina. Remember, used to call him Sharpie. And that's because he was very, very sharp in mind. Ptach pumech kre, open your mouth wide and read psukim. Ptach pumech tane, open your mouth wide and say over your mishnayos. Ki echa detit kayembech, you want the Torah to be in you, v'torichai, and that way you will live long. Shenema, ki chayim em lemotz ehem, ulechol besarom marpe. Don't read motz ehem, those who find divrei Torah, but rather lemotzi ehem, to those who announce it, proclaim it, and bring it out of themselves completely from their mouth. Omer le Shmuel Reb Yehuda, another thing that Shmuel said was shinana. You have to look at this world as a series of incredible opportunities, okay? You know those TV programs where they give you like 5 minutes to take everything that you want from the supermarket? That's what this world is like. So grab what you can. Grab it, eat it. Grab it, drink it. That this world that we're losing, the Alma Dazlina, meaning every minute is another minute closer to the end. Ki Hilulei Dami, this is like a mamish. This is an incredible, incredible celebration. And you've got to take advantage of everything which you can. You can't put anything off. Omer le Rav le Rav Amnuna, Bni, if you're able to, and you have enough money, hey, tev lecha. Don't, what are you saving your money for, you idiot? You got a chance to buy yourself a new Tesla, for heaven's sakes. Be on the cutting edge. You say, well, I don't need a Tesla. I can get along on this old Chevy Spark. Nonsense. Hey, tev lecha, get yourself the best. Because believe me, in that hole where they're going to be throwing you, there's no fun, okay? And you never know how soon you're going to be down there. In l'mavet itma'amea. And if you say, no, I want to leave something over for my kids. I mean, if I buy a Tesla, what am I going to have left in the bank? Never say that. Aniach levanai chok. Ha! And who's going to tell you in the grave that they didn't use all your money for buying super class, forget about business class, but class AA airline tickets, that they're going to report to you in the grave so that you should enjoy all of the fun they're having with your money? You got to be nuts. B'nei Adam domim le'izvei asadeh. People are like grass in the field. You look at a blade of grass. You know which one is going to survive, which one is not going to survive. What are you telling me? You're leaving it for your kids. Either they'll find their way to grow without you, or they won't find their way to grow without you. That's the way life is. Halalu no tzitzin, halalu no vlim. Some of them really grow like crazy. Others just wither down and die. And if they're going to survive, believe me, they'll survive without your money.